Welcome back to the 9th edition of the Smuggler's Den. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and joined always is my famous co-host, my illustrious co-host,
Ben Tully, and I go by Scarlet Knight on the boards.
And this week we have a special treat for you. We're recording on April 1st. As promised, we will have an interview with Nate French. So, Nate, welcome to the show.
Hi, yes, I'm Nate French. I'm ready to be interviewed.
Unfortunately, we still are working on clearing up, getting Nate on the show. It will be in a couple episodes, and that impression by Ben sounded nothing like Nate.
I've never actually heard Nate speak, so I just went with what I got.
And before we start, as always, you can email the show at smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com if you have any questions for us.
Yeah. And you can also check us out on our Facebook page, which is also the Smuggler's Den. We're actually really ranking up some of the numbers now in terms of followers on the page. There's always some type of at least a little bit of discussion going on. And it's a nice little place for a really fast, direct back and forth between members of the Star Wars, the card game community.
I'd also like to bring this to the attention of everyone who's listening, not just the Facebook people, but I'm trying to put together a playtest group for regionals on Octagon. So if you play on Octagon and you are a high-level player, that is, you've memorized the pods, you're looking to excel this season, let me know, and you can join our group of other like-minded Octagon testers. Well, the main event for this week, we have a regional coming up on Friday. I'm sure others have regionals coming up as well.
And so for those of you who maybe have just caught on to this idea that there is a regional in Southern California on the weekend of April 5th, it's at KingdomCon, and that's kingdom-con.com. The prize pack for the regional season looks amazing.
Yeah, having 8 playmats go to top 8, that's really crazy. Last year, I believe it was only the top 4 who got playmats. So basically, if you're at a small regional, you show up to the regional, you get a playmat. That's a pretty cool deal.
That's a very cool deal.
All right, so with regional season upon us, I thought it would be good for Ben and I to go over what you should do to prepare for a regional, what you should expect from a regional, basically how regionals operate. Ben and I have both played in a number of Game of Thrones regionals. You could say we're old hats at this. So, Ben, what would be your first piece of advice to give someone before they actually make it to the event?
So I think one of the key things people will really want to do is to make sure that the deck that you're bringing, you're really familiar with. And so this is one of those things that it's going to depend on who you are and how much you play and the types of things that you like to do in the game and how well you want to know how the deck works. Tiny and I, as we like to have our decks made maybe a week or two a week or two on the outset of an event and really try and like play and play and play and play. And it's not always just to be changing cards. You know, you play a couple cards, you realize that set, you know, this objective set doesn't work or that objective set might work better. It's more to get a feel for when my deck is doing this against this type of deck, I really need, or maybe I'm hoping, or maybe I need to hold back cards in my hand that will do this, right? So there's a lot of examples of this. We've gone over a bunch of them before about when you play Jedi Mind Trick or when you play Counter-Strike or when you use your Super Laser Blast. You want to make sure that you're taking all that into consideration. And the more times you play with your deck, the more likely you'll be able to get into a situation in regionals where maybe you're a little stressed or your adrenaline's pumping. And instead of making a brash decision, you make a very reasoned decision for what your deck is supposed to do.
Yeah, that's really the best piece of advice I can give also before an event. Know the matchups for your deck. Know, more importantly, when your deck is doing badly, what are the cards you're digging for? Know what your outs are. If you don't know your outs, it doesn't help to discard your whole hand to draw more cards. You really have to know, okay, I've seen this circumstance before. I've been in this terrible spot. This is how I came out of it. If you don't know that, there's not a great chance you're going to be able to make that comeback. Another piece of advice closely tied to that is don't change your deck right before the tournament if you haven't tested the changes. And I think this is especially tempting in this game, where you can just say, well, you know, I don't know, it's a little weak to this, so I'm going to throw in just these three small changes, which ends up being three whole pods, which changes roughly a third of your entire deck just with three tiny changes. It's really hard to make small tweaks to a deck in this game. So resist that temptation as much as you can.
Unless it's something, I mean, this is one of those things coming from our community that we have set up from a Game of Thrones. Historically, that has been one of like the ways that people played the game. Some of the better players in the meta used to show up the day before a a convention or an event, not really sure what they were doing, and then kind of sit there and spitball the whole night against each other. I've seen it happen a couple of times, and then build a deck and play it. The thing is with that is that these were players that have been playing the game for years and years. And so even though the deck they were making maybe was completely from scratch, you know, they had a really strong command of what the deck was supposed to do and the way it was going to work, kind of like an intrinsic odds type of thing. When they're, you know, in Game of Thrones, when you have characters and locations and events and you want a certain combination of them. As Tiny said, for this, it's a lot different, because every time you change out an objective set, you're changing out five of your cards. And so if each change, you know, is only one objective set, but it actually can be a pretty big change for your deck.
Yeah, definitely. Another point that's somewhat connected to this is you really need to know the card pool in its entirety for this first regional season. It's so small, it's just foolish to not know all the cards your opponent can play. For instance, if your opponent is playing Rebels and they have three resources left, you need to at least put in your thought process, they may have Akbar. They may be bluffing that they have Akbar, but you at least have to take that into your thought process. If you attack with 4-1 strength guys, they throw an Akbar and kill them all, that is your fault for not knowing that Akbar was available in this meta.
And we've been seeing it a lot ourselves, Tanya and I, where especially now that the first Force pack has come out, what we have has been have been people in our meta who have been really trying to spice up the objective sets that they're using in their decks. And so before, and Tanya will say that he's made the mistake and I've made the mistake, was where we kind of, Tanya and I both kind of knew from the meta what the decks were, right? We knew about the Jedi deck. We knew about the Rebel deck. And so when somebody subbed in a pod that wasn't really one of those ones in the deck, we had already failed in what we've been telling everybody else to do of know all of the pods, because we'd only concentrated on the pods that we thought were competitive. And that really threw us for a loop and has been causing some hiccups coming out of that first Force pack release.
Oh, speak for yourself, Ben. That was never an issue for me.
You never just memorized the cards that were in the Han Jedi deck and that was it?
Oh, no, of course not.
No, of course not. That doesn't sound like you at all.
Yes, no, definitely. You get in that rut of just knowing what's in people's decks rather than what's in a pod. But this is a little bit different of a point. I mean, if you can memorize every card in every pod before the regional, that's awesome. You should do that. But backing away from that, you need to know what tricks your opponents have. If your opponent's running a Jedi deck and he has resources open, know that they might have a cancel, they might have a mind trick, they might have a swindle. You need to know what options are at least available in all the pods as a whole.
I was playing somebody the other day who had, and so this is one of those situations where they didn't play the objective. They played a card and they discarded it from their hand. And I looked at it and I was like, are you really playing the Shadows of Dathomir as the objective? And they were like, and they kind of like giggled and they're like, yes. They're like, but it's for one specific card. And then I kind of sat there and was like, oh, I kind of know what that card is. I think they must be doing it for the Rancor. And then they played Disturbance of the Force. I was like, ah, no, that's what they were using it for. They were using it for Disturbance in the Force. And it really boned me that first time it got played. Even though I knew what pod it was, I just couldn't remember what all the cards were.
Right. And that really is that next step. If you can memorize every card in every pod, then it's going to be a huge boon to you and your knowledge, because this game really is about knowledge. knowing all the cards, knowing what's coming. And what Ben did there, whenever someone discards a card, immediately look at that number and see if it's in play at. You want to whittle down the available pods as quick as you can. And vice versa, don't necessarily discard a card from a pod your opponent doesn't know you're playing. It's a tough decision to make. Okay, I don't want this card, I want to draw one, but it's that free information you're giving your opponent. Now, if you're playing Sith and it's something from the Palpatine pod, that's fine. They know you're playing Palpatine. If you're not playing Palpatine and you're playing Sith, well, you're kind of a moron at this point. But if it's
I like to interject there, and I'd say you are brave. And Tiny uses Palpatine as a crutch, man. Palpatine is a crutch.
Okay, Palpatine is a crutch used by good players. But the point is, yeah, if you're playing Shadows of Dathomir or Heart of the Empire or some other cool trick, don't reveal that until you have to.
I've been using it. I think that's hold on, two thoughts. First, I think that's really great advice. Tiny's advice there of maybe thinking about not discarding a card where your opponent might not be expecting that pod. Like if that pod isn't one of the three that you're showing, it might be the surprise that you need to get that win off your opponent. The other thing I was going to say there is you can use the cards that your opponent's discarded to kind of have an idea of what pods might happen if you're light side when you blow up one of your opponent's objectives. It's great if you're going to go after, you know, you're going after somebody who's not playing a Sith deck and they have the draw objective face up and they have the one that buries a card at the beginning of the draw phase and maybe a two resource objective. But if you go after one really heavy and you know that one of the, they're maybe playing a Splashing Imperial and they might have Defense Protocol in there and you could have the possibility of revealing Defense Protocol that's then going to start doing damage to your units. You know, it's one of those things you might want to take a step back and be like, maybe it's better to spread out the damage. Maybe I don't want to take the risk of now being at the mercy of this new objective that I didn't know that they had. You know, it was a surprise, and now it's going to be a problem against me.
If you know they've discarded cards from that objective, so you know they have it, that's good advice. I mean, it's boned me a number of times as the dark side, where I've destroyed a light side objective. They flipped over questionable contacts and boom, they killed my resource chud, all from me killing their objective. And so it becomes that really difficult situation of, you know, do you blow it up or not based on the knowledge that you should have. Another thing that's important is knowing the rules, especially the rulings on your deck. Make sure you look over the FAQ before the event. It's still really small and it's really important to know exactly how your cards work. Where in the phase they work. For instance, if you're running the Leia's pod with the shielding, if you're running defensive Yavin 4, it's important to know exactly how that works and to be able to explain it to your opponent clearly.
This also goes doubly, not just for the rulings on the FAQ and being able to explain it, but you should have some idea of how the tournament is going to play out. It's all great if you want to go and you're going to play, and this is your first big event. But it's going to be really important that you know that you're going to be playing both of your decks against your opponent. It's really important to understand when the tiebreakers are going to happen, because as much as you're going to have tournament organizers and people who are supposed to know the rules, sometimes it falls through the cracks. And one of the things you don't want to have happen is for your point scores for any individual round to be wrong. You don't want to be in this situation where later in the rounds have got, you know, as the rounds have gone by, you may be a point or two short. And I have a feeling in a Swiss format for this game that those little points, having three and your opponent having two, you know, having a tie as opposed to having two losses. And so it's going to be really important that you know the rules, you know the tiebreakers, and you know how they're supposed to be reported.
Yeah, definitely. Another thing that's important before heading to event is practicing, but practicing correctly. And that means not taking back actions, not saying, oh, I missed that react, let me go back. You know, when you're first learning the game, that's fine. When you're showing newer players, that's fine. But as you're really getting serious in your preparation for the event, you need to treat it like it is an event. Because I'm going to give you a secret. If you ask somebody, hey, can I take back this action? They're going to say no. And every now and then, someone will say yes. and it's not a good thing. I've heard this happen a number of times where someone's new to tournament play and they feel like, well, I should let them. So someone says, hey, can I take back this action? They say, yeah, I guess. Then, you know, 30 minutes later, they have the same problem. They tell that person, hey, can I take back that action? And the person says, no. They say, what do you mean, no? I let you take it back. And they kind of smile and they say, I know you did, but I'm not letting you take it back. People are not going to let you take back actions in tournaments, nor should they.
And it's one of those things that really can get you very quickly and bite you very hard. Some of the, you know, Tiny's giving you an example where it kind of plays out over time and you're hoping that maybe your opponent's going to be as courteous to you as you were to them. But it could happen in a much quicker fashion where your opponent maybe plays a card, uses a certain set of resources, plays a second card, realizes they played their resources wrong so that when they went to go play their third resource, they didn't have the right match. You say, okay, it's not a big deal. Go ahead, reorganize it. They now have the right resources. They do something like play that final super laser or play a rebel assault on your key character or objective or play a Jedi mind trick or any of those things where, you know, just that one thing, and it could be the game changer. And so if they have made a mistake, you're not being a bad person, bad player by saying, no, you can't take it back. You're forcing them to be good players.
All right. Yeah, that's a good point. Basically, practice correctly. If you get in bad habits in your practice, they will carry over into games. Trust me on this. I've had this happen to myself. I've seen this happen to others. Practice makes perfect, but only if you're practicing perfectly. One more piece of advice I have for a tournament is because of how the tournament rules are set up, you need to choose a deck you can finish games with in about 30 minutes. So for some, this may mean running a Rebel deck or a Navy deck because it's super fast. Or for others, this might mean if you're playing a Sith deck or a Jedi deck, you've practiced it to the point where you can play it very quickly. Neither you nor your opponent is going to be very happy if that first game goes 45 of your 70 minutes or your 60 minutes, depending on how the tournament's set up. You need to be able to finish your games in 30 minutes.
This is going to be really crucial. And we've been hearing a lot of stuff on the website, on the Facebook page, of people being like, Tiny and Ben, we don't know what you're talking about. You're crazy. Our games only go 45 minutes, even when we're playing both sides. It's not that big of a deal. But we have been on the other side of that, where it just seems that, you know, the light side has slowed down, the dark side, the dial's only going up one a turn, the dark side's not getting any of the cards that they might need, and it just goes. I know that one of our meta mates was keeping track of all of his games that he was playing last week. And on average, I think for his light side deck, you know, he had like 22 minutes and 27 minutes and 29 minutes. But then right there underneath all of that, there was a 44-minute game. And so if you're playing somebody in a tournament that's 60-minute rounds, that leaves you 16 minutes for your second game. There's no way you're going to be able to finish that.
Yeah. I was also timing my games, and I was able to finish most of my games in under 30 minutes. But I was playing a Sith deck, and all those games were going like 28 minutes, 29 minutes. And that was with me intentionally playing very quickly and also kind of giving my opponents the business a bit if they started really lagging behind in their play speed. So we've been talking a little bit about memorizing stuff, knowing the meta. So I would say if you can't memorize all the pods, which for many of you, you won't be able to, what you should definitely do is memorize the ones that have Twist of Fate in it, because these can be the real game changers. You need to know by looking at your opponent's stuff if you can throw a Yoda into that edge battle knowing you're going to get it or not. So Ben, I'd like you to tell me, what are all the pods that have Twists of Fates in them?
Oh, boy. Let me think. Leia's pod has a Twist of Fate in it.
Yep.
The neutral limited one per deck light side objective that has a secret informant of it. I can't remember the name. That has one in it, as well as a number of other fate cards.
Hit and Run?
Oh, it's the name. Is that the name of the what? Is that the name of the objective?
Yes, it's called hit and run, and yes,
then the hit and run objective. The other objectives that have it, I think. Why do I think this? I don't think that's right. I want to say that Yoda's pod does, but I don't think that's right. Is that right?
No, that is not right.
I don't know. I was just about to say this, is that I've seen the game now change over the last couple of weeks where just to cancel your quiz of me completely because I'm failing at it terribly. But what I've seen is there was a couple of days or play weeks where we had decks where nobody's running Twist of Fate. You could tell by the cards that were in the objective set, you know, as you should be able to, and also by the way your opponent was playing. And all of a sudden people were like, okay, I know I can put all of these cards into the edge battle. This is going to be okay. You know, I'll put in my Yoda. I'll put in 9 edge icons. And all of a sudden this last week, it's kind of gone back the other way. I was playing a deck that was running 4 Twist of Fate. I was playing opponents that had a number of Twist of Fates in it. And all of a sudden it was back to being like, I can only play 1 or 2 cards in my edge battle. This is going to be really tough. I have to make sure I have the right number of cards. I have to play it like he has Twist of Fate again. And it really changes back and forth like that as you go back and forth how you play the game. But go ahead, Tanya. You tell us what all the objectives are that have Twist of Fate in it.
The objectives with Twist of Fate are, like you said, Leia's pod for the Rebels, the totally broken Jedi pod with the Guardian of Peace has the Twist of Fate. That pod has everything. And then Hit and Run, like you said. For the dark side, they actually have 4 pods with them. They have Council of the Sith. They have Defense Protocol. And they have their neutral one as well. Reconnaissance Mission. And then also the new Sith pod, Killing Cold, has one as well.
That's a lot of Twist of Fate.
Yes. So basically, if you're running a Sith deck, it's quite possible to have 4 Twists of Fate without doing anything particularly unusual with your Sith deck.
And those Twist of Fates are going to be huge. They're going to be huge. And you always should be, as we've said before, assuming, especially going into a regional to a final tournament, assume that your opponent is going to put that first card or their second card, even their third card. I had somebody, I called it last week, Tiny. You weren't there. You missed it. Neil put down a card into the edge battle, and I looked at him and I said, you know, I know that's a Twist of Fate. And he was like, and he kind of smiled at me and he's like, no, it's not. Why would you think that? And then I put a card down and then he put a second card down. And I was like, and now what you've done is you've played a Twist of Fate and you played another card to make me think that you're not having a Twist of Fate. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I played a second card and then he showed it up and it was a Twist of Fate. He lost it. He was laughing so hard. I knew it.
Well, good for you, Ben. I'm glad you're able to sniff out those Twist of Fates like a Twist of Fate sniffing dog. But I see it now. I see a lot of tournament reports that go something like this. I would have made the top 8 if only that guy hadn't Twist of Fated me in that one spot. So be ready for the Twist of Fates. They're coming. Don't let them wreck your day.
Don't let them wreck your day.
Okay, so once you get to the event, we have some more advice for you. One of the most critical things I can tell you is be ready for a long day. If you do well in the tournament, you may be playing basically 12 hours straight with, say, a 1 hour break for lunch and a couple of 5 minute breaks throughout. 12 hours is a long time to be thinking hard without food. So what I always tell people, bring food in your bag. Maybe you won't eat it. That's fine. You need to have that backup option. You don't just want to be buying Twix bars all day from the store and going on these sugar highs and crashing every other hour. You want to have that consistent energy level throughout the day.
Tiny's right here on this one by so many degrees. And you see it all the time in these very big, long tournaments. And it's not just food. You want to be hydrated the whole time. You want to, if you're having problems sitting down for all that time, if you get a chance to take a break, you need to take that walk. Go outside, get some fresh air. Make sure somebody knows where you are all the time. There's an infamous occurrence that happened in the Game of Thrones community way back when, in 2004, in the finals at Worlds, somebody went to have a smoke break and didn't tell anybody and got disqualified. And it became this huge touchstone for the rest of, like, the next 5 years in the Game of Thrones community. So just, you know, if you're going to go outside and you're going to take a quick break, make sure somebody knows where you are, somebody who's going to tell the tournament organizer where you are at all times. The other thing you want to do and remember is when you get, if you are fortunate enough to get in after playing hours and hours into a top eight or a top four, or even a final round, what we see time and time again is the person who has done it more often tends to come out on top. And it's because they have a completely different mentality than somebody who sits down, is at the final table, and is running on adrenaline. They know it's going to be hard fought, and it's not going to just be like one of those things that they can come in quickly. They've done this before. They're more methodic. They're not going to let something slip them up. While somebody who's done it before, not done it before, and is really excited about being there, can make up a mistake before the game even starts and could really ruin it and ruin your chances of winning.
Yeah, it can be really hard when you're at your first top four, your first final table, to just take that deep breath and say, this is a game like any other game. I can't let my thoughts be clouded by the gravity of the moment. And it's like everything in life. When you've been there and you have that experience, it's a little easier. Last year, I made it to a number of cuts, and in every one, I wasn't able to quite push it through. And I'm hoping that this season, having that experience behind me last season, will help me. But it is tough because we have a guy in our Game of Thrones community who's the world champion. He's been playing 10 years. No matter how many times I've been there, he's been there more. And he always has that slight advantage on me there, as well as being straight up better than me, which hurts as well.
It is difficult when the player playing against you is better than you.
Yeah, that's always unfortunate. All right. Another crucial element of tournaments is have fun, be social. You know, we all know that we're there to win, but don't be that guy who's sitting in the corner in the hoodie, brooding about your deck and your losses. Have a good time, meet people. I make it a point to introduce myself to every person at the event I don't know yet. At my first event, I knew nobody. And in that circumstance, try to meet, you know, 3 to 5 new people that day. Make it a point to meet people, have a good time. People will probably go out after the event and socialize. Do that as well. Make it a whole social experience. Don't just show up for the games and then head out.
One of the reasons I keep coming back to these types of events, to these games in particular, is the social aspect of it. And saying that to, you know, various degrees, and I'm going to use this term affectionately, nerds, may or may not be something that you guys, you know, you in listener land think about, and maybe you're just there for the game, but it's been the people that have brought me back consistently. Anytime I feel like I'm slipping in a game or it's not as fun, I go to an event and just go with the point of having fun. And you can really recenter you and the reason why you were doing this in the first place. It's about having fun. It's about, you know, playing with your friends, and it's about just having a good time.
Yeah. Closely connected that, though, when you're talking to people and you're making conversation, you know, let's say you don't know this person, so the only thing you have in common is this game to start with. Don't use that opportunity to reveal stuff about your deck. This is one of the big blunders that newer players make. I often have people sit across from me and they'll flip over their agenda or their objectives, and I'll say something like, oh, wow, I can't believe, looks like maybe you're not playing Leia in your Rebel pod. And they'll say, oh yeah, yeah I am. I'm playing Leia and Akbar. Don't do that. Don't tell your opponent anything about your deck. Make them work for every little bit and crumb of information they can. The more information you give them, especially in this game, the more knowledge they have to work against your deck.
So the last thing I want to say about being at the tournament and interacting with other players, and this one is really key, not just for you, but for everybody else who's there, is, and I have done this, and this is one of those things where I think, if at the very least it's what I can do when I'm not the best player in the room, is lose with dignity and grace. You don't need to be the guy who is known as the one you don't want to play against. And it can be a really quick transition from the guy who seems to like be having fun and having a good time, to the guy who has decided, like, this is awful, I can't believe it, I'm supposed to be winning, I'm losing now, and you take it out on your opponent, you maybe take it out on your friends, you take it out on a tournament organizer, you take it out on anybody you can get within arm's reach, and you just shouldn't do that, ever. There's no excuse. Everybody is there to have fun, and it happens to everybody. Everybody loses. It doesn't matter how many times you've played or how amazing your deck is. You just have to realize that losing is part of the game, and you can't win them all. And if you're expecting to win them all, you're going to not really be somebody that people want to play against. And you just don't want to be that person. You really want to just be there and have fun and not take it so seriously that when you lose, because you will lose, almost nobody goes undefeated when you do lose, that it's not a personal thing. Nobody was out to get you. The world isn't ending. You just need to, you know, recenter and get ready for your next game. That's what you got to do, and it will make the whole tournament experience better for everybody who's there.
Yeah, and this is really hard for ultra-competitive people. I'm one of those people who I don't play card games to be creative and make cute decks. I play as a competitive outlet, and so when I lose, I'm frustrated. But like Ben said, you can't let that overwhelm you and your reactions with other people. Yes, you might have gotten screwed by a bad draw. Yes, you might want to go over and start punching the walls, but don't do it. On the flip side of that, you should also win with dignity and grace as well. Don't be that guy that when he wins gets up and is like, yeah, you know, your deck kind of sucks. You know, you should do this and that differently and talk a bunch of smack and then walk away. You know, win with dignity and grace, say, you know, thanks for the game, and move on.
And it's really tough, I know, especially if somebody you're playing against is the type of person who doesn't like losing, to sit there and look at them and say, it was a close game, you know, good job, give them a handshake, but you should do it anyway. Make sure that when you finish the game, no matter what the outcome is, you look your opponent in the eye and you say, that was a good game, hard fought, you know, tough beat. But I'm sure you'll pick it out, you know, especially if it's in the early rounds. Make sure you encourage them and tell them that they'll probably pick it up and that there's always the next game.
And remember, when you write your tournament report, people might read it. And if you act like a jerk in your tournament report, that's just as bad as doing it at the table. You might think something about somebody or some interaction, but just keep that between you and your friends. There's no reason to make this a big public affair.
So, and just so people know, a tournament report is when people at the end have kind of kept track who they played against and what the decks were and the outcomes, and tries and like lays out some of the bigger plays and how the decks flowed back and forth against each other. And, you know, people normally post these on the boards, and it can be really helpful and informative for the rest of the community, especially going further into the regional season.
Yeah, I'm hoping that all of you out there who do well at tournaments write tournament reports. It's good for everyone to see what decks are doing well, what do other metas look like. I know for me, the thing that I enjoy most about tournament season is reading everyone's tournament reports. Okay, I think the last thing we want to talk about with tournament prep and playing in tournaments is the fact that you are going to make mistakes. Don't let them own you. In this game, mistakes are even more costly than other games that I found. But mistakes are very quickly compounded by the player who goes on tilt and can't let that mistake go. Now, I speak from experience here. This is one of my problems. I hold myself to a high standard. I feel like I shouldn't be making mistakes. But guess what? I do. Everyone does. Don't let that one mistake make you cause three more mistakes and just lose the game.
I know Tiny was saying before about the timing situation, where you want your opponents and you to maybe be moving at a quicker pace, especially if you know your deck is kind of slow. But you should always take a moment. If there's a mistake that happens and it was crucial and you feel like, oh my God, I can't believe I just blew that, you need to take a minute. Don't be looking at cards. Put your cards down. Take a deep breath. Don't let the next play that you have be another mistake, or the play after that be another mistake. Just take a step back. Take a relaxing breath. Be like, it was just one. You know, I'm going to make my opponent make one in the future. It's going to be fine. I can't have a perfect game every time.
Yep. So I hope everyone enjoys their tournament season. Get those tournament reports out. If you want any more advice, feel free to email the show. We'd be happy to talk about our experience as tournament players. And most importantly, have fun.
Yeah, everybody get ready. We'll try and post updates while we're playing Friday afternoon. We'll have an idea. You know, we'll post on the Facebook page, maybe on Card Game, maybe on the FFG site about how many players we have, how many rounds we're going to go, who makes the cut, who makes the finals. It'll be really exciting and informative. So try and pay attention, participate where you want. It'll be really, really fun for the community.
So last episode, we looked at the new pods, reviewed them a bit, and I've got to say that after actually playing with the cards, my impressions of these pods have changed a fair amount. I'd like to take a look at two pods specifically, which are the Sith pod, the Killing Cold, and the neutral Dark Side pod, Shadows on the Ice. And I told Neil I would credit him this, but Neil is the one who played these against me, against my terrible Rebel deck, and just beat the bejesus out of me and made me really reevaluate these pods.
Well, let's hear it, because I got to play against them, and I don't think I had the same experience you did.
Okay. Well, let's start with Shadows on the Ice. This is a Hoth objective, and it gives you two resources, which is fine. But it has some really, really good cards in it. The Wampa is absolutely phenomenal. I did not realize how good he was. He basically shuts down Rebel decks because it gives you two unit icons that are not edge dependent for free quite often, sometimes for one, and it has three damage capacity. That is a fantastic unit to be able to just put out first turn along with, say, two other guys. So you're getting three guys out. One of them is an amazing defender. It slows down that first turn home one or rogue three quite a bit.
It is, in against the Rebel deck, a really huge card and really needs to be taken into consideration during that first turn while you're playing your units, which we all know are fairly squishy in terms of health capacity. And so you want to be very careful in how you deal with the Wampa and what your plan and how you interact with that card in particular.
Yeah, I had a guy who put down home one and rogue three turn one. And I was like, oh, wow. I wonder if I've lost. But I had out the Wampa and a couple other terrible cards, and he attacked with home one. I was able to block with the Wampa, play heat of battle, boom, home one's gone. And then the second card in this pod that I love will go with the rest of this story. So Succumb to the Cold is a phenomenal card if you're playing Hoth objectives. Essentially, when they remove a focus token, you refocus it. So the next turn rolls around. They've got Rogue 3. They think, well, my home one blew up. At least I have Rogue 3. I play Succumb to the Cold. It's still exhausted for the next turn as well. So basically, those two Hoth cards completely blew up what looked to be the absolute dream start of any Rebel deck.
They are really good cards when played correctly. In the current meta, and I think this is, you know, where we stood, and I think I still stand, even though, you know, Tiny obviously believes that they're very strong. In the current meta, it's still, they're almost there. There's always going to be that possibility that because you only have three Hoth objectives that you just don't see it. You don't see a Hoth objective. Maybe you don't want to play it. Maybe you already have a bunch of two resources with no ability in the deck that you're playing, in the pods that you're seeing in that first four. And you're like, I can't play Shadows on the Ice right now. And all of a sudden you draw into a Succumb for the Cold or an early Wampa. And, you know, the Wampa is still good three for three with the two icons, but it definitely loses some of its punch without being able to put it out for the reduced cost.
Yeah, I would say at three for three, it's just not really worth it. If it was two cost, sure, but three to me is just too much for a Wampa. And so I agree that if you're playing just this one Hoth objective, it's not going to work. And that's why I like the Killing Cold, because I feel like if you have three of them, I've only had one game so far where I did not get one of them as one of my initial three. And I lost that game because I got in my first hand two Wampas and a Succumb to the Cold. So basically these three cards that went from being absolute all-stars to either unplayable or just not that good.
And to go back to what we were saying before, that would be a situation as the light side where you might want to avoid taking out objectives. Because if you start taking out objectives, maybe one at a time or two at a time, but don't finish off the game, they reveal a Hoth objective, and now all of a sudden all of those cards that they were holding in their hand that have become less efficient, we're now going to start just kind of wrecking your face.
Yeah, I totally agree. And if you see them with a Hoth objective, you probably should take it out because a lot of these cards are Hoth dependent.
It's also a good point.
So with the Killing Cold, though, it comes with the Ice Tromper. So while the Wampa is the anti-rebel card, the Ice Tromper is in many ways the anti-Jedi card, especially as you get into mid-game. It becomes really difficult for your opponent because in order for them to actually do damage, they have to win multiple edge battles. So let's say they come in with Yoda and he's got three enhancements on him. Yoda, if he does not win the edge, doesn't do much. So you block with the Ice Tromper. They put in a whole pile of cards to win that edge battle. You say, okay, you win the edge battle. Boom, sacrifice the Ice Tromper. Now you have to win another edge battle to make Yoda actually be able to enter a battle and do something.
It's amazing in terms of shutting down people going after that weakened objective or that objective that doesn't have any damage on it. Not just they're wasting cards in their edge battle. That is the ideal time to do it after they've wasted cards in their edge battle, for sure. But it's so much control. And the best thing is it doesn't need to be participating in the challenge, right? Or in the conflict. It could be out there and you could put all this effort into, you know, maybe you have three or four characters into the edge battle to win it. And then you could Ace Tromper their key character. I mean, it's a pretty amazing card when it comes down to it.
Yeah. And the fact that he has a non-edge dependent unit icon is really cool as well. So, you know, you win the edge. You shoot one guy, you sacrifice him to pull the other guy out, and they went from having a surefire, however many damage they were going to do to the objective, to no damage to the objective.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's good. The first week that it was out and we were playing with it in the local meta, I definitely saw some people not using it to its full potential. Is one of those things where the card might be on the table. It might have one damage on it. I even saw it in a situation where it had a damage and double focus. I was like, that's it. You just sacrifice your Ice Tromper there. Like, it's the best case scenario. I attacked with one person, sacrifice your Ice Tromper, keep me from engaging that objective that I want to, do a damage to one of my characters. I mean, that's an amazing combination right there for a card that was already not doing anything for you on the board.
Yeah. I mean, he's basically a Han killer. If Han attacks you and you block with the Ice Tromper, you hit Han, you sacrifice the Ice Tromper, you kill Han. I mean, he's very, very strong for only being two cost and just basically a chud.
Right.
Another card that's really interesting is Fear. Now, of course, against a Rebel deck, it's not really going to do that much. But I've put this card on Yoda already probably four times in not that many more games than four. Yoda's just that ideal target if they think, okay, yeah, I'm going to put Yoda out, I'm going to take the Force, I'm going to slow you down to a crawl, and you go, boop, Fear. All of a sudden, they can't commit Yoda anymore. Yes, you've given Yoda an attachment, but again, these are edge-dependent icons. You're not going to give Yoda that attachment if you have no way to handle him. But if you do, it can be really powerful.
I can see that. I mean, if it's one of those really... I would like to really applaud FFG for this card because it just makes so much sense to put it on Yoda, but at the same time, it can be it's such a boon for the light side player. It's already another enhancement, so Yoda gets those icons. It's a second enhancement, so if you're playing the new Jedi pod from this first Force pack, you can now use Calm on Yoda. You can do all of these other kind of little tricks. And it's just for the sake of Yoda not being in that, you know, and you can further Force battles. And so you just said there, like, you know, you don't do it if you can't deal with Yoda having those extra icons. But if you can deal with Yoda having those extra icons, you probably could have dealt with Yoda having the Force the entire time, too.
It depends on what you're trying to do, though. If you want to be able to actually attack and defend with Palpatine, you need to not have Yoda sitting there with all those icons dedicated to the Force.
You just encourage Yoda to go and attack. Palpatine is not going to be sitting there for much longer.
Well, sometimes you want Yoda to attack. Then you might actually be able to kill him. And then the final card in the pack is the Desolation of Hoth, which is really situational. I mean, it's this really difficult thing. If you have Hoth objectives out, we just said you might want to kill them. But guess what? If you try to kill them, Desolation of Hoth can completely bone you.
I had it happen to me last week. It was in one of those situations where it really didn't bother me. I kind of was like, well, I'm glad you got to play that, because at that point I already had a Han and a Luke and a Yoda on the table and had a copy of Luke in my hand. So when my opponent used Desolation of Hoth to kill Luke, I went, oh, that's terrible. I'll just play him next turn. Don't worry about it.
That's nice.
It was really nice. I felt really happy about it when it happened to me. It did mean that I took an extra turn to win, because they cleared off all the damage off that objective, which is also really strong. But at the same time, I was too unhappy about it.
All right. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
So I would say overall, I've bumped up these two pods to certainly playable, and I currently have been trying them in my Sith deck. I'm not saying I'll take them to regionals, because perhaps Interrogation is just straight up better. But it's certainly a viable alternative with, if nothing else, a lot of great Force icons. Desolation of Hoth has 3. Fear has 2. Battle of Hoth has 3. I've been winning a lot of edge battles since I started playing with these cards.
Yeah, you say that, but the other ones are really terrible. Ice Trumper has 1. Wampa has 1. Succumb to Cold has 1. So, you know, especially the Wampa and Succumb to the Cold, if you don't get those starting Hoth objectives, you're not really getting much from those cards. The one Force icon's really not really helping you that much.
Yeah, those cards are really dependent on that, because if you do get them, there's no way you're playing them for edge battles. You're just going to dump that Wampa out, and you're saving Succumb to the Cold to completely mess up Han. I mean, Han is just the amazing guy to play it on. You know, Han doesn't have Elite. They pull their token off Han, and you just go, bloop, let's put that token back on. And they get quite the frowny face going.
Frowny face.
All right, so where do you stand on them, Ben?
I don't think my opinion has changed much yet for them. I saw them play it against me last week. I still think that they will be really strong, especially the shadows on the ice will be really strong as more Hoth objectives come out. But unlike you, I don't think I've been swayed to say they're better than they were last week or last episode. I think they might be exactly where I thought they were, and they do exactly the type of kind of interfering with the way that current decks are playing that they are supposed to do. But I don't think that all of a sudden they're now better than they were. I definitely think my analysis of them hasn't changed too much.
All right. Well, that sounds good.
Yep.
Let's move on to the last big topic of the day, and that is, are Rebel decks terrible, Ben?
I really don't know. I hope they're not, but I have been not having that much luck with them of late. I thought when these new Hoth cards came out, we had a new vehicle that was going to be doing lots of damage. It had 3 health capacity. We had Wedge, who was going to help people, you know, help these units take off focus icons. I sat down with my Rebel deck the first time, and it got crushed. And I was like, why is it keep getting crushed? And then I think, as we've talked about a couple times, I think it's twofold. There's 2 issues here that keeps hurting the Rebels over and over again. And the first one is that all of their units are squishy and have low health capacity. We've talked about this before. We try and talk about it how it's like an advantage. You know that it's going to happen. You put out all your cards on the table and you just attack, and you know that most of them are going to die, but that's okay because you're going to do damage to objectives. I think on the flip side, sometimes that can be really just such a pain in the butt when you can't keep your cards on the table and your opponent's still putting down cards. You know, you play a Navy deck, they don't have that problem. They're playing a Navy deck. Here's a couple TIE fighters. I put out my TIE attack squadron. You know, and they're staying on the board turn and turn and turn again. You put down your Y-wing and it's gone. Your Y-wing's gone. You put down your A-wing, gone. Okay, all right, that's fine. That's fine. I didn't get to attack with that, but now I'm going to put down my X-wing, gone. And you're like, what? There's just not enough cards on the table at that point to maintain them.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is going to sound crazy,
Yeah.
But I think the Wampa has put Rebels in a really tight spot. That Wampa basically kills all of the Rebel units just by looking at them.
The other thing I was going to say, the other issue that I have all the time with Rebels, is that it just seems like the pods, and we touched on this before, with their synergies are just a little off. And so while I'm excited to draw and I see Rogue 3, I'm really excited to see my Rogue 3, I'm excited to see my Home 1, there are other times where I'm like, I don't need another repair droid. I don't need another astromech droid. Like, I don't need these cards. These cards are killing me right now because I don't have the units to stay on the table long enough for these enhancements to be worthwhile.
Yeah, it really feels like they're draw dependent, because if you're planning to throw them all against your opponent every turn, if you are not redrawing those useful units, you are in big trouble.
And not just in big trouble for replacing your units, you're in big trouble in all the other aspects of the game, including having, you know, the reactions that you need to stop your opponent doing stuff. Maybe, you know, it's having your Rebel Assault. The other thing that you're really almost always screwed on is the number of cards that you have when it comes in for an edge battle.
Yep. Especially combined with the fact that it seems like Rebel cards just don't have a lot of force icons anyway. When I'm playing against Rebel decks, for instance, I was playing the Sith deck. I threw a Desolation of Hoth in there on defense. I pass. He puts two other cards in, and I think, I'm probably still going to win this. I pass. Sure enough, I win 3-3. Three little one focus versus my one card matches their three.
It's a tough matchup. I was really excited about Rebels going into it. We saw some really good play with them in the tournament that we were hosting 2 weeks ago, or 4 weeks ago now at this point. And I just don't know when they're going to get better. I keep thinking that they're going to. They just don't seem to be there right now. And I'm saying this, and I'm sure I'm going to get my face crushed on Friday at the regional by a Rebel deck. Like, I'm just going to lose. Like, the dial's going to be at 3. I'm going to get stomped. I'm going to be like, oh, so that's how you play Rebel. But at that point, I've seen that happen, and I've sometimes felt like, wow, that was really lucky. Like, you got, in that one situation I can think of off the top of my head, they got Redemption, Yoda, Home 1, and Red 3 within their first two turns out onto the table.
Yeah, I think that's how Rebel wins, is sort of by luck. Like, if you can drop Home 1 and Rogue 3 turn 1, two Y-Wings and Red 5 turn 2, yeah, you're probably going to win that. But you're not going to be able to count on that happening.
You definitely can't. And it's really tough, even sometimes when you get that combination down. There's a lot of answers to that type of stuff in dark side decks. And so you can have that perfect start. I mean, you said, you know, you just gave the example of Home 1 and Red Rogue 3 against your Wampa and how much damage that was able to do, followed by a Succumb to the Cold. I mean, that shut it down first turn. And so even when you can get down 5 cards sometimes, it still doesn't seem like it's enough. And you're like, why can't all of these blast icons do the damage I need to do? And it's a little bit that they're kind of really subjected to abusive control decks without any responses from them, from what they have in their hands.
Yeah, I think that's one of the other problems. They don't have good tricks or enough tactics icons to lock down your opponent's characters. You're pretty much just saying, well, whatever you got, you're going to be able to hit me with that guy.
Right.
And so I'm wondering then, do we have any possibilities for fixing them? So I'm looking at a Rebel deck like this. You're probably going to have two Home 1s, two Rogue 3s, two Red 2s, two Red 5. For me, that seems like the starting point. That gives you two pods to try to fix these problems we've been talking about. So do any of these pods do that you can think of?
So I've tried playing it with a bunch of stuff, right? I've tried playing with the Akbar pod, which is going to supposedly give you the trick that you need to maybe surprise your opponent. He's got those tactics icon. You can play them in a you can play him in a situation, maybe even when your opponent doesn't have characters. Say you attack. I like to do this a lot where I attack with a small Chud and my opponent goes, okay, that's uncontested. Like, you're only going to do unopposed damage, you know, but I automatically win the edge battle there. And then I play Akbar. And that can be a pretty big play right there. The other one I've been trying a lot one with is the Leia pod, specifically for her objective. The fleeing the Empire objective, which allows you to put a shield on a unit that's on the table or an objective that's on the table. And all of a sudden you can slightly increase the damage capacity of maybe your most important vehicle on the table. And then that makes it slightly more viable to play an enhancement, which maybe makes it, you know, slightly stronger, which then makes it more likely to do damage.
Yeah, the problem I see with Akbar is that he is a new player crusher. Like, if you did that to me, I'd immediately think, oh, he has three resources held back. There's a good chance he's going to drop Akbar, and he's going to try to do that. All I have to do is win edge battles, and Akbar is totally worthless. That's really not that hard to do against a Rebel deck. That's the whole problem Rebels have.
And what's your thoughts on the Leia objective?
And for the Leia one, I think Leia is a decent option. I love the shielding. I love the fact that she has Twist of Fate. But again, it really doesn't fix the problem of not having enough Force icons, not having non-edge-dependent tactics icons to actually lock people down. She has Akbar. So basically, Leia can be good if you get her with the follow-up tricks. She can be useful. But really, against the Sith deck, you're not going to be able to do the trick anyway. You're going to put her down. They're going to Force Lightning her. You're going to get more resources. Fine. But at least you won't get to do all the coolness that is Leia. Something I'm thinking about trying, and I did this a little bit last week and got crushed, is throwing Jedi training in there. Because that way you get mind tricks to help against, say, Sith decks. You get Binds All Things to get your big vehicles back after they die. And you get the location and the objective, which help you grab the Force. And if you can grab the Force from a Sith deck and slow them down or make them overcommit guys to the Force, you have a better chance of having enough time to win. Or at least that was my thought process.
And it didn't pan out like that?
I tried it with one hit and run and one Jedi training. And basically Neil put down a Wampa and said, okay, let me see you get a guy through. And I basically looked at his Wampa and said, huh, so every guy I attack with just dies. Awesome. And got crushed.
It's a very defeatist attitude right there.
Yeah, I just didn't have any answers for that Wampa, that particular game. We tried, I think, three games, and I lost them all within maybe a total of 40 minutes for three games.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was very ugly. Something I have been thinking about, though, and this might be totally crazy, is to put Han in there. Because with Han, you get quite a few tactics icons. So you're going to get Han. You get Crossfire, which can give you a tactics icon. You get the Twi'lek Smuggler, who gives you a tactics icon. And you can play Swindled to bounce that one guy who's going to wreck you. Now, the problem, of course, is Han only has 2 damage capacity and very easily dies. But I'm just wondering if maybe he's a possibility.
I mean, we know that Han is really strong and that when his card hits the table, it can be really game-changing if your opponent can't immediately shut him down. I've had him on the table and just been able to destroy people, you know, taking out the Devastator with Han, taking out all of these cards just with like, oh yeah, Han, he's going to attack here, he's going to do some targeted strike, he's going to attack again, he's going to do a targeted strike again. Oh no, I've killed everything on your board. That's so sad.
Yep.
But you're right, he only has 2 health capacity, and that makes it really, really squishy. I know that the deck that won our tournament, the Rebel deck that won our tournament, I don't know them all off the top of my head, and I'm going to apologize for that because I don't think I've actually seen the write-up for it, but I know that the player was playing Yoda and Redemption, so he definitely had those pods in there, and was playing Home 1, and Red 2, and I don't know what the last one is, but consistently, and it seemed like, and it's one of those things where I don't understand all the time when I lose to those decks how it works, because when I play those decks, I just get wrecked so hard. But to have all of the, he consistently got all those cards on the table, and then was just kind of able to push forward. And to me, every time that happened, I kind of seemed to think, that seems really luck-based. We've gone through 2 turns, he's seen 12 cards, and somehow he's now seen Yoda, Redemption, Home 1, and Red 2. But at the same time, he seemed to do it pretty consistently because he won the tournament.
Yeah, the nice thing with Rebels is I feel like since you can put so many big cards in it, you know, you can put in 2 Home 1s, 2 Rogue 3s, 2 Red 2s, 2 Hans, or if you're going to play Jedi, you know, 2 Red 5s and another, you know, maybe 2 Yodas or 2 Obi-Wans or something. You do have that opportunity, I think, every turn to draw a big character. The problem is, can you do enough with those big characters?
And will they stay on the table long enough?
Exactly. So another idea I had was maybe you could play Obi-Wan, because Obi-Wan himself has one non-edge dependent tactics card. If you're already playing Red 5, he might fit in well with that. I actually think I probably don't like that, but it's an idea.
I know, it's just tough. I'm running out of ideas of what we could do, especially with what we have with the core set and the one force pack.
Yeah, and you tried Luke for a while, and that seems possible since the Twi'lek guy has a tactics icon, Luke has targeted strike, but then you get those two enhancements that just don't synergize well with the rest of the deck.
Right, which you kind of avoid if you pick the other Jedi decks to try and enhance it.
Exactly. So basically the bottom line for me is I just don't think a straight Rebel deck is viable. I think you have to have some sort of way to make up for these deficiencies that we've talked about. I think Han is a possibility. I think maybe running Jedi training is a possibility. In fact, I think I might run this week 2 Home 1s, 2 Rogue 3s, 2 Red 2s, two copies of Han, and then two copies of Leia, more to keep Han alive than anything else.
Not because you're a hopeless romantic.
Yes, and to have them on the table at the same time.
That's so cute.
Oh, I know. So I think that wraps up our take on Rebels. So, Ben, I'm going to ask you again. Ben, are Rebels just terrible?
I really hope not.
Yeah, same here. But I'm actually thinking that right now they probably are. And we had a guy win our tournament with Rebels. So apparently we're both idiots.
We're just both idiots. I think that's really true. I think that one of the things you might think about doing is playing the big Rebel pods that you listed, and then in those four slots remaining, put in a bunch of different Jedi objectives so that you're not relying on Luke, which has the problem with his cards only work with certain characters or something like that. You could put in Luke and Yoda and Obi-Wan and Red 5 in one copy, and you all of a sudden have more characters, so you don't run into that synergy problem. You're not like, oh, I need Luke right now. I could maybe get Obi-Wan, or I could get Yoda, and those have Force icons, and I'm going to lock down the Force because they'll have Elite, and I can do these things with them that Luke can't do. I mean, that might be another way to do it. Just try one of each. I know we've been avoiding that. I've always done run two copies, but it might be the way to do it.
It's certainly possible. I would tend to say tactics icons might be the solution. So I really like Han's pod there. But I think people need to experiment is my point. I think we need to find what this best Rebel deck is. Okay, so it's time for my favorite part of the show when I'm not on the clock, and that is the pod quiz. So, Ben, I have randomly generated a number.
You know you haven't randomly done anything.
And the number is number 34. So, Ben, what pod is number 34?
Well, this is the thing, Tiny. Because you made fun of my logic so much, it's ingrained in my brain. The total number of objectives in the core set.
Which is what, 46? 56?
36.
Oh, 36. Okay, good.
And so I'm trying to think in my head what the numbering scheme is. And I think I know what it is.
I'll give you a hint. This one's pretty much a gimme.
It's pretty much a gimme? Oh, boy. I think it's corporate exploitation.
It is not corporate exploitation.
That would be a gimme. That is the definition of a gimme right there.
I might have been lying when I said it was a gimme.
Oh, it's funny. You're a funny guy. Funny guy. I think, you know what I think it is? I think it's the droids you're looking for, or whatever it's called.
Yes, it is. Looking for droids.
Yes. Yes. It's one of the neutral limit once per. It's too obvious, man. You made fun of my logic too much. I knew it had to be one of the three, and I knew it wasn't a reconnaissance mission.
This is true, but now let me hear you name the card.
Yeah, that's fine. I can do this. It's not a problem.
Okay, good.
You have the event that allows it so that it's an action and it allows you not to have to worry about affiliation matching.
Yes, Dark Alliance.
I think there are two copies of that.
There sure are.
It's Worse, which is an interrupt that cancels another interrupt.
Yes, that is correct.
Last two cards are, one of them is a fate card.
That is incorrect.
Yeah, I didn't think that was right. I feel like it should have something to do with a trooper, but I don't think that's right.
That is also not correct.
I don't know what the last two are. You're going to have to help me out.
One of them is the Viper probe droid.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And the other one is the Viper probe droid.
Ugh, if I had just gotten one, I would have gotten the other.
So we've kind of gotten away from this, but let's go ahead and give a quick evaluation of this pod. Sure. Out of five, how many stars would you give this pod in the current meta?
It's one of those pods that I think right now in the current meta is almost next useless. And I know there's one of the guys in our meta who's going to hear that and say, no, I use it all the time. It's great because I get to play my triple rainbow deck with the Sith and Boba Fett and Navy all in one deck, and it's awesome. And I really like It's Worse, but other than that, it's pretty much not playable as is in a really strong competitive deck.
Yeah, I would give this pot a zero. What I do love is the card It's Worse. I feel like It's Worse is absolutely phenomenal against Jedi. It just completely wrecks them because their whole game is based on things like, okay, I'm going to be able to play lightsaber deflection and send that damage to that guy, and that's going to be the game changer. And you go, nope, not only are you not going to prevent the damage, here's another one for you. That can be absolutely devastating. And because of that one card, I've desperately tried to find a way to make this pod playable, but for me right now, it's just not. I think that could change if in the box that's coming out, there's one objective set that's just phenomenally above the curve and you want to run it in every single deck, then you might have to start looking at this pod as a way of doing that. But right now, there's no one objective that I feel like is so good that it would be worth playing this to splash it into another one.
Yeah, its practicalness is really not astounding. The only thing I could think of, which would be like a fun way of including it, would maybe be to run it in an 11 objective deck where you play its one copy and then it's 5 and 5 of two different objectives, so that you're in that position where, you know, whichever house affiliation card you might pick, you might get stuck with the wrong set of objectives on the table. But I don't know if that would even be worth it.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it would to me. It's just, if the cards were good in it, that would be one thing. But like the Viper probe droid is basically worthless. Yes, he can come back and be a chud that's consistently soaking one damage, but really, that's just not worth it, especially to have two copies of it. And Dark Alliance, again, is just one of those cards. You're really going to play a card in your hand just to make it so that you can play another card? Like, that's just the whole card advantage, edge battle element of this card is a complete failure.
Agreed.
All right. So let's move to our last segment, our card of the week. And this week, I have selected the Wampa.
That's surprising. I would never have imagined for you to do something like that.
Yes, I have fallen in love with the Wampa this week. He is a 3-cost, 3-damage capacity unit that has 2 unit icons that are not edge-dependent. And most importantly, he reduces by 2 for each Hoth objective in play. No, not for how many objectives you have in play, but total. So if your opponent's playing one of those lovely speeder decks, and you have one Hoth objective out, your Wampa is free. And man, is he a pain. When I've gone against him, and when people have gone against me, you just don't even want to attack with this Wampa sitting there, ready to claw you apart.
My card this week is an amazing card. I think it can be a real huge advantage for the light side when you play it, and if you play it properly with the right support cards, Leia Organa.
Yes.
And we haven't used Leia before as a card of the week, and so I just want to kind of go over all the strategies. Oh, wait. Tiny, what day is it today?
I believe it's April Fool's Day.
Oh, man.
I think you just pranked people,
didn't you? Oh, no. Super troll. Oh, yeah. I was
well
really
done.
Not looking forward to the hate mail that would happen if people thought that was real. My card of the week actually is a pretty phenomenal chud in this game right now, and I really enjoy it. And it's not the Viper probe droid, but the regular probe droid, the one that came in the new Force Pack in Lord Vader's Command. It's a 2-for-1 health capacity droid. It has an edge-dependent unit icon damage, but then it has this interrupt, which is when this unit leaves play, deal 1 damage to a target enemy objective. And so it's just amazing in terms of when you're playing an Imperial deck and you're trying to do early game little bits of damage, weakening a bunch of different objectives that allow you to maybe do one big push, which I've consistently done now with, you know, something I like to set up for both my light side and my dark side. Everybody knows this now. I'm really just giving it away so that when time comes for regionals this week, everybody knows exactly how I play. But it's weakening each objective a little bit at a time, and then just trying to take out as many as I can in one turn. And the last time I played with the Imperial deck that had the probe droid in it, I would do things. I was like, I play the Imperial probe droid and put it down. And then I attack this objective with it while my rest of my cards are committed to the Force. And my opponent goes, oh, okay, I don't care. It's an probe droid. And I do 1 unopposed damage. And somehow I did another one. I don't remember how I did it. And then my opponent's like, oh, not a big deal. And then they play an emplacement. And they're like, do a damage to somebody. I'm like, I'll pick the probe droid and do a damage to the objective. And somehow I had done 3 objective damage with my probe droid. And I was like, totally worth it for 2 resources.
Yeah, that's for sure. I feel like even in a Sith deck, he's really good, because in a Sith deck, just oftentimes getting that 1 objective down or 2 objectives down is all you need to win. Getting a free damage out of a guy who's defending anyways, it's just a really good card.
It's a very good card. Very
it's not a phenomenal card, but it's a good card.
It's a solid chud.
Indeed it is. Well, thanks again for joining us on the Smuggler's Den. Tune in 2 weeks from now for our tournament recaps. Ben and I will probably have some level of complaining about our lack of results.
And how we did not win regionals.
May the Force be with you.